It's Tuesday, June 30th, 2015, and you're listening to episode 370 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 59 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
All right, we got several announcements. We're going to burn through here real quick and then get down to the meat and potatoes of the episode. First off, I want to read something that was sent in to us from the women's shelter that we donated to at Fear the Con. So for anyone who has not heard the totals, we raised just under, I believe it was, what, over $3,200?
$3,600.
Okay, so somewhere in the range of $3,500, give or take a little bit, at this convention for the Ferguson Municipal Library. Mm-hmm. And also for Little Red Door, which is a cancer charity. And then we did a drive of food, canned goods, and toiletries, which was given to the Women's Safe House. And one of their representatives, Sylvia Jackson, sent me a letter that I want to pass along to you guys and read here, because this is something, you know, we did as a community, so I want to read this to everyone. It says, on behalf of the Women's Safe House, I want to take a moment to recognize the generous donation of fruit, vegetables, and other personal items received on June 15th, 2015 from participants at your gaming convention this past weekend. Your support allows us to continue to serve the women and their families who have taken the leap to escape violent relationships. We support women and children by offering the basics, such as food and shelter in a safe environment, but we also accomplish our mission by offering food, counseling, and education opportunities that allow women and their families to heal from the emotional and physical pain they've experienced. Every year, we serve nearly 500 women and children, and 98% of these families earn $10,000 or less annually. Your support empowers these families to heal and move on to new violence-free housing and gainful employment. From our case managers to our development staff, the Women's Safe House is working around the clock to touch families with as much support and warmth as we can offer, but we cannot do it alone. Thank you for supporting these families as they are on the path towards peace and stability. So a good job and excellent work to Derek for heading this up, and to everyone that donated, for the people that played in the charity dungeon crawl, the people that paid money to mess with them, just anyone who gave anything. You guys did an outstanding job. Once again, we don't have the exact number, but somewhere in the neighborhood of $3,500 for the Ferguson Library and for the cancer charity, and then a donation of food and toiletries and other goods to a women's shelter. Excellent work. This speaks volumes about the character of gamers and all of you listening to the show.
Yeah, so, I am so proud of our community for just how much that we raised for this. When I heard the numbers at first, I was just utterly blown away. We raise a lot every year at the con for charities, but this year, breaking our own records, just amazing.
Yeah, handily.
The second thing I want to talk about is a charity that's coming up in a couple of months. You guys obviously are familiar with Brodor, and the chain that he manages is a chain of stores called The Fantasy Shop. Now, the guy that had that position before him, I believe he was the chain manager, was a guy by the name of Tim Meehan. And this is not by any stretch of the imagination an old guy, but unfortunately, he has developed a medical condition that has put him in a really bad state. And he is going to require a triple organ transplant. He's going to have a liver, a pancreas, and a large intestine all transplanted. Mm. And without this, he won't survive. And unfortunately, because a triple organ transplant is such an unusual procedure, in order to find a hospital that can handle all three kinds of transplants, he's going to have to travel. So his family is looking to offset the expenses surrounding all of this. And as a result, they are going to have a D&D charity trivia night on August 22nd at the St. Charles Fantasy Shop. And I'll put a link to that location in the show notes. Okay, so it's August 22nd, 6 o'clock p.m. at the St. Charles Fantasy Shop. There will be a D&D trivia game as well as a silent auction. Now, if you don't live in or around St. Louis or can't make it for whatever reason, but still want to help this guy and his family out, there is a GoFundMe campaign that they're running to try and raise money as well. So I will also link that in the show notes. But obviously, through Brodor and just from living in the area, we've got a connection with the Fantasy Shop. And it's really unfortunate to hear what Tim is going through. So we want to do what we can to help him out.
And Fear the Boot's going to have a table.
Yes.
So, well, and if you want to compete against Fear the Boot, or I should say compete against John while we drink.
Hey, I'll be drinking too. I'll just be answering all the questions as well.
I don't know if I've shared this story with you. My game that I ran Bard's Bard 4 this year, and it was filled with puns. My only gaming notes were sheets full of puns.
I hate darts.
I walked over to Derek at the beginning of the con, because this year he had his own table off to the side that he was running the charity stuff from. And I told him he needed punishment for making us feel guilty. So throughout the con, I continued to visit him, reading pun after pun after pun, watching the expression on his face as he couldn't leave because he was stuck at the table, and making him bear with his punishment. It was punderful.
Get out.
Just think, all those puns from the right bard would give you a +2 in combat.
They would.
So, on a more positive note.
On a more positive note, on in second edition, it was really hard to be a bard because of stat and race requirements. Now it's too easy. Go on.
All right, so you know how we keep screwing up Michael Matthews' name by calling him Michał? Okay, so someone who actually is, for real, Michał. This is not
the Polish pronunciation.
Yes, the Polish this is a for real Michał. Did something pretty cool for Chad.
Yes.
And it's also awesome for everybody, I should say, because Chad's game is Creative Commons and free and all that jazz. So, Chad, tell us about what the actual Michał did to hook you up.
There's this guy named Michał Cross, not Michael Cross. Just to read the first sentence here, I'm Michael, pronounced Michał. I'm a British graphic designer living in Amsterdam with a Polish name just to confuse things. So he said he really liked my game, Silent Memories. And what he did, since he's a graphic designer, he took my game. I didn't like reach out to him, contact him or anything. And he just took my game and he did the graphic design thing to it. He changed the fonts. He arranged it to where like each section was its own page. So when you print it out, all the pages come out in order. I mean, or I don't even see, this is how useless I am with graphic design. I don't even know what the terms are. I don't even know how to explain this. He put like this, these nice headers on the page, these sort of sidebar things. He even cleaned up some of the grammar.
I was about to ask if you checked for that, because I know right before the con, because you were giving out printed copies of your games in your game.
Oh my God, I can't believe
we were talking before the con and you're like, I just found more things. It's been up here all of this time, and I found more errors.
I found
errors.
A typo on one of my games on the front page, and as I was printing them out and signing them, I'm like, oh my God. So anyway, what Michał did is he did the graphic design thing to
it. He graphicalized
it. Yeah. So, like, and there's sections where I talk about, well, here's this character, or here's this example, and he would put that in a box and change the font to lift it out of the page to make it pop more. And he did all these really great things. I mean, because what mine was, I typed it in Google Docs, and I saved it as a PDF, and sent it up to the internet. But he made it, like, I don't know, look nice?
It looks beautiful. It looks professional. It looks like the game that could win a any.
Right.
Like, well, you should go back and try to get a gold now.
Right. I know, right? But no, he
should call it a second edition.
He put that up, and you know, he didn't ask anything for it. You know, it's not like he was saying, all right, but, oh, give me a shout out and stuff. But I will say he has a website,
which we will link in the show notes.
Michał.nl. What is NL?
Netherlands?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, because he's in Amsterdam. There we go.
Yeah, he's smoking fat weed and hookers.
I guess that's why
getting trade bonuses in all those strategy games.
Right.
Yeah, and then paying lots of VAT and other things that we Americans don't fully understand. But, no, all right, so what we're going to do is, first of all, Michał, thank you for what you did. The game looks great.
Oh, my God, it looks awesome.
This, once again, is a free game. It is available to everyone. It is... this one or your other one, your award-winning game?
Silent Memories is my award-winning game.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we are going to, of course, link this in the show notes so you guys can grab a copy of this game if you want it now with graphicalizing. And we also will put a link to Meow Meow's website if you want to check out some of his other work. So
as much as it pains me to compliment Chad, because I never do it.
Uh-oh.
Silent Memories is a really good game.
Thanks, man.
I have played it under two different GMs, only one of them being Chad. I have run it for Chad myself.
Yeah, did a great job.
And I really enjoy the game. I think you've put together a good game there.
Well, I appreciate it.
I feel like I shot myself in the foot because I read it, and I feel like I really compromised the value of the game. I've never played it before under you, Chad, or anyone else. So if you want to play it, if you're coming to a Fear of the Con or something, it looks beautiful. but don't read it. Read it after you play it, because there is the secret, and it's impossible to miss in this book, and you're probably better off not knowing it the first time.
Though, I did play under a GM who changed what the secret was.
Right.
And that secret is fairly plug and play. I mean, you can yank that out and replace it with something your own.
The idea is that, you know, there's the rules and the concept, the mechanics and all that, and it is told through this story that I have going through. And it's not narrow. It's not like reading a novel. But through the entire book, all the examples given are one game. It's the game, so to speak. And then all the paperwork and all that is for that game and all the examples. So you can read the book, understand the rules, and then have the game to be able to play. But the game is also designed, and I have an entire section in there about running the game, about how the whole thing is modular. The whole concepts are very plug and play, and then you can just completely take it apart and put it back together again like Legos and get any kind of story you want out of it.
Yeah, when I ran it for him, I didn't want to run his story because he knew it. So I ran the story that Almighty Bear on the forums ran for me and Dan at A Fear the Con. So I didn't do my own work either. I still took someone else's
prep
work.
That's double lazy.
That's right.
But I had a lot of fun running it, and I've had a lot of fun playing it.
You know, and Chad, there might be a larger show topic in there, because what you have really kind of defies easy classifications, because it's not quite a game, it's not quite a module, it's not quite a setting.
It's an experience.
Well, I don't even... it is, but I'm not playing.
I have a term for it, Dan. It's a term that I heard for the first time at this last Fear the Con. A party RPG.
A party RPG. Yep. Well,
it's
don't know.
It's pretty depressing and everybody dies.
The most dismal party you've ever been to.
Well, and on top of that, I could come up with a variety of one-shot modules and rules-heavy things that would be also party RPGs. But that's the thing about Chad's game is it's got, like, some elements of a module, some elements of a setting, some elements of a standalone game.
But everything is replaceable and changeable in the whole thing. I mean, if Morning Sky Studios, my tagline is, we're rules guide, not govern. That's what I want out of Silent Memories.
You had
and
a really good writer write that for you.
I did.
I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, all right, let's move on then to today's topic.
Oh, I would like to say real quick, too.
The topic's about you. Good God, you have to talk.
It's Chad.
How long have you known me? Let's look at a pie chart.
Okay,
remember the last time Chad wasn't on an episode? Because I don't.
So I just wanted to say real quick, too, that if you have already checked out Silent Memories and you're cool and don't want to play it, go to morningsky.com because I redid the entire website.
Okay.
So
I will also link Morning Sky in the show notes so you guys can find this new module and all this
Sky
other.
With an E.
Right. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. So
I'm award winning. And I went to space camp.
That's an inside joke. It's not going to work here. So. All right. Now, something we do want to talk about, because this is something we've talked about in the past and we apparently have a new approach to it, is gaming for large groups or running for large groups. We talked about this in the past and
I think our advice is horrible in the past.
Well, I think the setup is horrible.
To be advice, don't do it. Because I stand
That's
by
still
that.
My advice. No, I stand by
You know, the positive advice, as in positive do this advice, I think it boiled down to have co-GMs.
Well, that was
awful.
That was an option. That was not the only option we gave. That was an option. Well, I did play in one game where it worked. It typically does not, but I did play in one game where it worked. And
I stand by it being bad advice.
Well,
I mean, always terrible except that one time.
All of the advice about how do you GM for 15 people is similar to asking, so what do you do when a plane is crashing?
I would agree with that.
And it's like
But we know it's going to crash when we're on the ramp, so we can get off and leave and then call the three people in that group we actually want to play with and go set it up behind their backs.
You know what's hilarious about that, right? So at Fear the Con, I had a slot. One of my backer rewards, everyone was doing backer rewards, and the other hosts were doing backer rewards where five or six people, and it was very limited and that sort of thing to get in their games because they were normal sized games. And I made mine unlimited. If the entire con wanted to show up, I was going to cook for them because that's part of the thing. It was the culinary VIP package where I cook for you and then I run a game for you while we eat.
And I tried to talk you out of the unlimited.
And I said no because I was not on my meds that day and I'm like, I could do anything. So it was really stupid of me to do it, but I did it anyway. And so I got 16 people, and then the way the back rewards chained off of each other, that suddenly went up to 25 people. And what was interesting about going back to what you were saying, John, is that, yeah, there were people who bailed on it. There were people who came out as like, oh, yeah, I backed it. It sounded really exciting. But now I'm kind of understanding what the full measure of this is.
I'm walking up the ramp to the airplane. Yes. I see bolts falling right. off and fire and...
Yeah, I mean, I had people come up to me and say, hey, is this really that many people? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, well, I mean, I know you're kind of a loud guy, but I have a hearing problem.
Yeah.
And I think it would be fun, but... I won't be able to hear a person on the other side of the table. And so, I'm like, yeah, that's true.
I do want to emphasize going into this topic that what we're really about to do here, this is like interviewing the hero on the Hudson guy, that a plane crashed and somehow he turned it into something kind of cool. That does not mean you should try this at home.
It wasn't kind of cool. It was freaking awesome.
Role playing is dangerous.
Yes.
Role playing, I mean, this is serious business. You could do this and it could go hideously wrong. And next thing you know, you're high on LSD in the steam tunnels and pretty much everyone you know is dead. And I just want to say right now, we warned you, all right?
Yeah. If or worse, you could wind up playing riffs.
Ooh. In a fursuit, LARPing it.
Slow down there.
So, we're putting that out there right now.
It's a family show, Wayne.
This is a dangerous idea. Don't try this at home. Yeah. But Chad, being a trained professional, he's an award-winning plane crasher.
That's right.
So, here with us today is the hero on the Hudson. Chad, you ran a game for 16 people.
16 people at one time.
Skip the food part. We'll do Chad's culinary tips in a bonus episode.
I do want you to link one thing, though.
All right. What do you want, Molly?
The recipe.
Okay.
Because that was part of my backer reward, is that I'd provide them with the recipe of what I cooked for them.
Okay.
Nearly everything I cooked was scratch made, except for like the pies.
Like as in chicken scratch.
Chad doesn't bake. I cook, but I don't bake. I made jambalaya.
That's why I like Julia better. She bakes.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? It's team.
I know.
Team up.
We need to get, like, you, Sarah, and Julia together in a kitchen.
Yeah, right. Nothing would get done. We'd all drink wine and have a great time, and you guys would starve.
Fair enough. All right. So how did you make... Because I walked by that game several times. I didn't play in the game.
Did you? Because I was so engaged in the game, I was oblivious. I never saw you.
Did you see me videotape the end of it?
Wayne, I'll tell you the absolute truth. I knew someone was videotaping. I mean, I was like... in the zone, right?
All right, so let's go back to the whole hero on the Hudson thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you said you were going to do this, it's like somebody in a passenger plane saying, hey, watch this, and taking a nosedive at the Hudson. And you just kind of assume something bad's about to happen here.
But you want to watch.
And as I watched your game, okay, you know, I totally knew, just because I know you, that you were going to do this. You were going to make a serious attempt at it. You probably had some kind of a plan. But I really was expecting... that I was going to see one of two things. Mm-hmm. Possibly
a shit show.
No, I really was expecting a total shit show.
I was kind of scared that was what was going to happen.
A table of bored people, or what I thought was more likely, is a handful of engaged people with the remainder utterly disengaged. And yet that is not what I saw. Every time I walked by, I mean, I don't want to speak on behalf of those people, but I mean, they seemed excited. They seemed enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. They seemed involved.
Oh, yeah. They were having fun.
And so I'm curious, how the hell did you make a game for 16 people work?
Well, we had like 25 people sign up on board. And then we had a lot of attrition when people kind of chickened out, or, you know, again, the hearing issue was one of the main ones, or there were competing games where like, hey, I'm really into this, but I must do this other game and that sort of thing. And then there were other people who were like, well, I just didn't quite understand that this was going to be that many, and I just not into that. And that's all cool. It's absolutely cool.
A little behind the scenes, Chad, when he saw the number get to 25, came around, he's like, would you guys please run something big so people might jump out?
I did run something in that slot.
You did? Thank you.
You're welcome very much.
Thank you very much.
Though, you know, speaking of people with hearing problems, side note here, did you know our show actually has a pretty substantial contingent of blind listeners?
I had no idea.
I just recently found this out. I guess it makes sense given the fact that podcast is an audio form of entertainment.
Right.
But we have a somewhat, I mean, not a large number of people, but disproportionate to the population. I don't know what that is, that and military people. We have a lot of military. But anyways, but carry on.
So anyway,
16 people.
16 people. And then out of those 16 people, there were even people who gave up their seats and traded it because I allowed people to serve. We called it the golden ticket. that you could trade your golden ticket with somebody who didn't back or whatever, and they take your slot. I won't get into the food too much because, like you said, we could do a whole bonus episode on the food part of it. We'll just talk about the game, even though the food was pretty interesting.
Well, you know how much people loved our candy sampling bonus episode. that was like top notch here at the booth.
That's
there.
Right. So, man, we do need that sad trombone.
I want to play sad the trombone for our Fear the Walking Dead RIP Google optimization party.
Yeah. So my idea was, it's like, you have this many people, you kind of need to subdivide the work. And co-GMs are a bad idea. They just don't work. Except Dan's one time.
Mm-hmm.
The one
time I hit the Hudson, nose up.
Yep, they just don't work. So what I did is, I need to get the individuals involved, and I cannot hold their attention. So we need a way for them to be a part of something. So what I did is I took
it. Can I pause you on that? And this is not tangent. This is related.
Sure.
And it's right on that thought. The problem strikes me as being a little bit different than how you phrased it. I can certainly hold the attention of 16 people. If you can stand in front of a room and talk, you can hold the attention of a large number of people.
Well, that's not a game.
Bingo. It seems like the problem is not that you can't hold their attention, but that you can't be flip it over. You can't be attentive to them.
Right. So what
16 people cannot have your attention.
Right. No, it's impossible. So what I did is I divided them into two teams. Now, this game that I came up with, now I made all the food from scratch. I made the concept of the game from scratch, and I made the rules up from scratch. So I made up everything. The concept of the game is called Because Reasons. And I made this is kind of me making fun of steampunk. I call it Gas Planet Punk. And it was about, in the future of 1939, we are on other planets and there's a gas planet. And, you know, they mine rare gases out of it. And they have these great dirigibles. It was kind of a play on the dirigible train thing, but we didn't really get into the train aspect of it. And anyway, there's these great dirigibles that ply between the gas mining stations and the port that sends the gas off into space. Why these two aren't together? Why? Because reasons.
Yeah, because reasons.
And it was really over the top sort of stuff. We had dirigibles and there was like all the steampunk stuff and the sci-fi stuff. And I divided the group into two teams. They were pirates. And what they had done, and this is not where the game starts, what they had done is they had attacked one of these dirigibles that was shipping all of this rare gas to the port. And these two pirate ships, they had captains, but they were controlled by this Commodore, this sort of head pirate, that these pirate teams hated each other. I programmed that in. I'm like, you guys hate each other, but this one guy keeps you together. And so I started them where they have taken over the ship, but I said a bonehead on one of your ships, there were two ships, pulled this stunt maneuver and crashed into the other pirate ship. So both pirate ships are destroyed, the two teams, the remaining crew, and you have this one Commodore guy who's keeping everything together. The cockpit is locked. You can't get into it, at least yet. I mean, they could try. That's going to be the game. And you are all celebrating. You're sitting at this table eating dinner. Again, this is a culinary thing, and we're kind of
okay, so you kind of have a LARP element.
Right. And so I was sitting at the head of the table, and as the Commodore, I rose a glass in toast, took a drink, and then fell over dead of poison onto the ground.
Nice.
Game starts. So now they're sitting across from each other, and I made up this system. So this is where the system starts coming into it. The system is democracy. I'm not calling it democracy. It is democracy. It's voting. So there are two bowls on the table. Everybody gets one chip. You get additional chips if you impress me in some way. You know, great ideas, role-playing, tell me I'm a handsome man, tell me my food is wonderful, that sort of thing.
So lie to you.
You know, hey.
Okay, so these chips, it sounds like, they don't just represent a vote. They represent a vote plus influence.
Oh, like it's
social capital.
It's absolutely influence, right? As a game master, I have two sets of chips. Or I have two piles, right? I have the chips that I'm giving out that I can't use. The only way I can use them is I can give them to people when they impress me in some way. Captains get three chips. So the teams vote on who their captains are. One team had a split vote, and it split like three times. And I said, screw it. Your team has two co-captains. And I gave them each three. And then the other team was like, oh, it's that kind of game, right? we're screwed. Okay, we know what's happening now. And the rules were, if you want to do something, you had to get your team on board. You say, it's like, okay, well, I want to charge in and shoot all the guards with my lightning pistols because I am an automaton steampunk guy. And it's going to be really awesome. Well, you had to convince your team to vote for you. And then they say, oh, yeah, yeah, okay, we'll do that. We're all going to vote for you. We're going to put all of our chips in. The other team votes against you. Now, your team can throw chips in their thing if they want to vote against you as well. Because I had everybody make characters, and they all had to make connections. They had to make a connection. The character sheets were a note card, their name, a couple lines of who they were, their connection to somebody on their team, and their connection to somebody else on the other team. And people made all kind of rivalries and love affairs and betrayals and all that sort of thing.
It does strike me right there. There's something you just said and something you haven't talked about yet, but I observed that I think helped a lot. Because when you've got any large number of people,
yeah,
because you cannot easily interact with them all, it is human nature to subdivide into manageable groups.
Right.
This is just how people work. This is what we do. You put 100 people in the room, you don't have one giant 100-man circle. Mm-hmm. You break up into little groups, right? So first off, telling these people you have to make a relationship with other players, especially if you're careful to make sure you don't get circular relationships or relationships where this half the table's got relationships and that half the table has relationships, but there's none between them or whatever. That's an important thing. But there's something else that I saw. If you imagine a large table or tables capable of seating 16 people, which is what was happening. This was on a stage. So it was a long table or two or three tables stacked lengthwise. Then your obvious social cliques are going to be based on the simple geography of the table. Yet many times when I looked up at your game, I noticed that people were either not sitting at the table, they were standing up in large groups, or they were rearranging themselves.
Right.
And if I had been running this, I think one of the big lessons I would have taken away is the power of getting people either to not be sitting at the table, or if they are, every so often to forcibly rearrange themselves so you don't get these separate clicks.
Well, I say one other thing I see you're doing here is the Chad move. When Chad runs games, just from having watched you run games, one of the things you seem to strive for and one of the things that tells you you're successful is if you can sit back and not say anything for a while and just let the table run itself.
Absolutely.
And by doing these, basically you're setting that up so that can happen.
Clicks formed, subgroups formed, conspiracies formed, and one of the things with it is that you could pay me a chip to make something happen. Think of it like a fate chip. Like, I'm trying to get in this door and it's locked. Okay, you pay me a fate chip. Well, the key's on the other side and I stick it through and I get the key out or whatever. But imagine far more gonzo and crazy stuff that they were doing, right? People bribed me with these chips and they would write it on notepad or come, but I made them come to me. I made them move around.
Yeah.
And so that helped too, instead of just sitting there bored, not doing anything. So anyway, you do this voting, right? If you want to do something, you want to go and shoot lasers at people or whatever. When the voting's done, it's counted up and then you either succeed or fail. If it's your opposing team wins, you fail. And if you win, you win. Your team wins. The captain then takes all the chips in his bowl and keeps them. It's his understanding that he is supposed to distribute them back to the crew, but he doesn't have to. He can keep them if he wants to. He can screw over his entire crew. And everyone's like, whoa, you know, I told him that. It's like, ah, and I'm like, but there is a balancer to this because players can kill other players.
Yay.
What you need.
Oh, so when I blow two people out of an airlock, I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
players can kill other players. Yay. I'm sorry that nobody listening probably has any idea what we're talking about.
To kill another player, you need, it's no longer.
What if they wanted to kill their character instead?
You can do that. But here's the thing. There's no chips. It's a raised hand vote. It's the entire table. It has to be a 2/3 majority.
To kill somebody?
To kill somebody.
So if I say I want to kill Wayne's character.
You have to convince your entire team and almost half the other team.
To kill.
Yes. And
did it happen? Did they kill each other?
About four or five people died.
Yes.
Yes. And what happens is your character becomes a ghost, right? And so you could still interact. You're interacting. You're like, I'm a ghost. And right. So the ghosts are different. The ghosts do not get chips. They can't vote. But when all the chips are put in the bowl, the ghosts can haunt and they can move chips from one bowl to the other. Remember, it's a closed economy. I'm refreshing the economy by throwing chips at people who impress me.
If a ghost moves chips from team A to team B, B has just gained power.
It is beneficial to kill people on your own team to make them ghosts.
Because they can steal chips.
But they don't get chips. They don't get a vote. So you can't kill too many people.
All right. Let me move to the next thing here.
I had one more question about this mechanic.
Yeah.
One team had two captains.
Yes.
How did you deal with them getting the coin? Did you split them between the two?
I didn't deal with them at all. That's their problem.
Yeah, I think you're looking for level of math and balance. You're not going to find in a Chad game. All right, but there's something else you're describing here. So I talked.
Yeah. One more thing real quick.
It's on this subject.
Real quick on the voting thing. So when people bribe me, I get a separate stash of chips. I can use those chips to vote. When there's a vote, I dump those in if I want to.
So one of the things that concerned me from the start was the social aspect, the cliquishness, things like that, the inability of people to really meaningfully interact with a large number of people at once. And you found a way around that. The second problem that I've seen in these gigantic games is people's importance is oftentimes based on one of two things, social boisterousness or the function that they play. For example, if there's 12 people and one healer, that one healer is going to be a popular guy or girl, regardless of, you know, how boisterous they are. But if you have an economy that is small in scale, meaning you don't have 15 chips a person to work with, you've got somewhere between, sounds like, one and three to work with, you have to get these proportions of vote, these two-thirds votes and such, that are not necessarily going to be easy to do.
Right.
And anyone that's dead has the ability to manipulate these already thin margins. You have just created a mechanic where everyone is necessary. And, you know, I want to say right now that there's a brilliance. There's a brilliance. There really is. And I'm not just saying this to stroke your ego.
I can stroke my own ego.
I know. That's why I'm not bothering. It's like masturbating Pat.
You'll just get in the way.
Yeah, really. Exactly. Tickle his ass. I mean, that's really all there is for you. You know, but there's, because if you look at a lot of games, they want to go for balance. They want to go for everybody's important. Mm-hmm. And they do that by adding complexity.
Yeah.
But what you found a way to do here is to actually make everybody important the opposite direction.
Yeah.
The game is so uncomplicated that everyone's contribution is equally important, because while the characters may be radically different, their mechanical contribution is almost universally identical.
Right.
I mean, yeah, one person might have another chip or two, or if they're dead, have a slightly different mechanic, but nobody has a truly novel mechanic to the way they operate. Right. You don't have somebody who's the DPS versus the tank versus whatever.
We had people who the roles, I never said, okay, we need two doctors, three medics, one captain, blah, blah, blah. There were no class or roles. But people said when they were making their characters, they knew the framework of what was going on. We're on these dirigibles, we're pirates, and blah, blah, blah. We had people who, one guy was, I am a mechanical cockroach the size of a dog who is intelligent engineer.
That guy sounds awesome.
We had one of the captains was a doctor who was a dog wearing a monocle and a top hat. Another one was a poetry writing gorilla. The awesome one, right? So I'm going around. Here's the thing. I'm going around. I'm
the gorilla wasn't the awesome one?
No. I'm going around, right? These are all people of all different ages, right? We had men, we had women, all this sort of stuff. I'm going around. Okay, so what's your character? Everybody has to introduce your character. What's your character? Well, it's this, and blah, blah, blah. So you go through, I go around. I had a kid in my game. He was like between 8 and 10 years old. I am really horrible with ages. I'm thinking he's more like on the 8 scale, I think. I get around to him, and I'm like, what's your character? And he starts reading it. He is playing a mechanical dragon who has a laser-firing helmet. I stand up and I'm like, okay, all you guys, you got to step up your game here. A dog, a cockroach. I'm this automaton. I'm a poetry girl. This kid is a dragon with a laser helmet. He understands the game.
But the game is really...
All right, next piece of advice here. One of the difficulties in any game, even a smaller game, is to create something that's truly memorable within the confines of what the game allows, all right? How do you really make this human fighter more interesting than the other human fighter?
Give him a silly name.
Well,
and, like Dirk Action. He was one of the captains.
It is certainly possible to do in any game by a well-developed character, but you're allowing them to make something instantaneously memorable and outlandish. Because, I mean, look, in a con game that's 3-4 hours long with 16 people, ain't nobody going to have a chance to stand in the old exposition spotlight.
Right.
And so... you gave them a great way of being unique and memorable right out the gate. I think, once again, simplicity of the mechanics allowed that. And I'm not praising simple mechanics as the end-all be-all of gaming. If they listen to the show, they know I like crunch and balance and all that. But I think for this
when you
situation...
have 16 people...
Somebody has a laser dragon and is in truth...
A dragon with a laser helmet.
Okay, my bad. So she's got the Omega helmet. Or what is it called, Wayne? The thing that Darkseid wears? You don't know what Dark's...
Because he does the Omega beams from his eyes. It's not something he wears.
No, well, in some of the iterations, it's out of his helmet. He actually shoots it from the gem on his helmet.
But, Dan, I want to see the look on your face as I tell you something, since Chad mentioned interesting names.
Okay.
So, after Fear the Con, I played in a dungeon crawl as an After Hours.
Okay.
I was playing a druid. My character's name, Drew, D-R-E-W, Id, I-D. I was Drew Id.
That's awful.
That is
anyway,
terrible. And it was worth it to see that facial expression.
You're bad. You should feel bad.
You're like the guy who did not safely land on the Hudson.
I had an ape in armor. Well, I called it ape.
So you were asking, you know, how do you...
From George of the Jungle.
Yes, thank you.
I hate monkeys. I really do. So anyway, you were asking, how do you get people engaged? That's the point of the mechanic, right? Because to do something... you have to convince your team to support you. You have to convince them to vote for you.
You know, Doc, you ought to write this up and publish it because it is such a freaking good con game. Like, I don't think you could make a campaign out of it.
Oh, absolutely not.
Maybe you could, but it's such a great con game. And people do have this problem where you're at a con and you can really only safely, quote unquote, run for like 4, 5, 6 people.
Right.
But there's just a lot of people standing around with nothing to do. And you really don't want to play yet another game of Cards Against Humanity or Are You a Werewolf? You ought to publish this and just call it like the shit show system or something.
I actually plan on writing it up and I plan on calling it Corruption.
Corruption?
Because it is democracy where corruption is a central mechanic. Because people bribe the game master constantly and they hand me notes and it isn't like I said, the example was, oh, well, there's a key on the other side of the door. That's not what they did. It was more like the engineers understood what the problem was.
Yeah.
And they knew that they might fail and a whole bunch of people are going to die. So I got bribed of, you know, you're going to die, but here's a chip for you. How we're going to die is we're all going to run out of air, but I have a rebreather. I'm like, no problem. It's things like that. Or, I mean, it was like really big stuff that people did that they bribed me with. You get a stack of chips and you walk around and when you have one, you're just kind of playing with them. But when you have 10 and you're going, you're going to influence the next vote. So if one of the votes is really unbalanced or...
Yeah, if it takes 2/3 to kill me and one guy sitting on a fat stack, he's going to get my attention.
I really believe that game mechanics need a pressure valve. They need a way for the game master to rebalance things, to actually influence what is going on. I do plug that into some of my games, and this was how I did it in this game. Because if one team was really getting screwed over and losing, I am partial, right? I'm, you know, I'm not fair. I can dump my stack of bribes into their bowl to give them success.
That is one of the most honest Game Master confessions I have ever heard in my entire life.
Well, one thing I noticed while I was walking around recording was that some of the players were pocketing so people wouldn't see
God,
how many they had.
Oh my God, beautiful. They were finding ways to cheat. It was wonderful. All the bribes, all the deals, because you have to start interacting with your captive. You want your chips back? You got to interact with the captain. Captain can be a total asshole. Captain's a total asshole. You're going to vote to kill him. And there were people who voted. It's just like, I'm going to kill him. Well, why are you going to kill him? Well, because it'll be awesome. Well, guess what? He did not win. He did not win the 2/3 majority to kill the captain. Now, somebody was like, I want to kill the captain because the kid with the dragon with the laser helmet, the captain got blown up and killed, and he got, we called it ghosted. He got turned into a ghost. Everybody on his team was voting for the kid to become the captain.
Well, duh, you have to.
Right.
I would.
So the kid, I'm talking to the kid, and the kid's bribing me. He's like, I want to bribe you to bring Dirk Action back to life. And I get down on one knee. And, you know, I'm 6'3", and this kid is like 4 feet tall.
Not 6'3".
Right. Yeah, so I get down on my knee, and I'm kind of talking to him. I'm like, you know, you might not know this because you were talking to me, but your team is ready to vote you for captain. He looks around, he's like, no, man, I want Dirk Action to be captain. I don't want to be captain. I got my laser helmet. And he's bribing me to make his laser helmet more and more awesome all the time. And I'm like, yeah. So he bribes me to bring Dirk Action back to life. And so I give him this scene, right? Because Dirk Action is, he's all into explosions, and he blows himself up, and that's how he died. It was crazy. And so everybody comes up, and the kid's like, and it's like, okay, Dirk Action's dead. And I'm like, oh, wait. And I hold up my bribe that I just got. Suddenly, through the explosion, the smoke, and all clears, and all the body parts, and all the horribleness, this dragon comes fluttering in. And then he fires his lasers at the ashes. And then, like, some 3D crazy-ass printer starts reassembling Dirk Action.
Total annihilation. It's a lathe.
Yeah.
He's just building.
He did.
Yeah.
And I described them holding it, and he's reassembling, and Dirk Action's back. But I had to give Dirk Action disadvantage. He was totally naked. He just put the body back together, didn't put the clothes back together. Because he was naked and he no longer had any explosives, his team took one of the cards and drew a black spot on it and gave it to him. And so he had the black spot, which in Pyrolingo means that your crew's going to mutiny here. So he abdicated the captaincy. Because it's such an advantage to have two captains, they elected two captains.
Did you have an issue with anyone in the group who seemed kind of quiet, kind of wallflower, and did not seem like they really had the social composition to just jump into the middle of this, but at the same time did not seem satisfied being an observer? Because some people just like quietly watching and, you know, whatever. I don't have a problem with that. But did you have anyone who looked on the wall at a dance?
I'm not sure. I don't think anybody was excluded because the mechanic prevents that. Imagine,
well, yeah, every vote counts.
A politician has to pander to his constituency.
Yeah.
So when you want something done, you have to convince, you have to engage the rest of the group.
Yeah, and in a group that small and margins that thin,
right,
which vote is unimportant?
Exactly. So I don't think that there was anybody who was ever like totally disengaged, but before I started the game, I give speeches to my players. One of the speeches I gave was me basically saying, it's like, okay, guys, A, this is sort of like an experiment and an art project. And so that means it could go horribly wrong. It's not play tested. It's barely thought out. And I've never done this before. So we're going to have to work together. If something's not working, tell me. We'll change it on the fly because everyone needs to have fun. But bear with me. And two, there are 16 people here. We talk on the show about how it games are all about spotlight and giving people spotlight. I can't keep track of it. It's too many people. So speak up, speak out. Or if you can't speak up and speak out, get with your team to collaborate on cool ideas and be a part that way.
You know what also I like about this voting system for that kind of game is another one of the big problems that typically occurs in a large game is how long it can take to get through everyone if you have something that's action-oriented. Okay, for example, a combat round.
Yeah.
Well, I have to figure out what you do and then roll the dice for that and maybe move some minis, whatever, and then go to the next person, the next person. And it takes so long for it to go around. But you have involved everyone in every action by virtue of saying, look, either you can bribe me the chip and it's done.
Right.
That fast. And obviously, they don't have enough chips to do this on the regular basis,
right.
So it's got to be something irregular in nature. But every other action requires a vote. And so everything that I want to do, if I'm not prepared to bribe you, some kind of vote's going to come out of this.
Yeah.
And so everyone is involved in everybody else's spotlight, so to speak.
Can get bogged down. People talk too much. There's too much kibitzing. There's too much, you know, well, we need to, oh, I'm not going to vote for it. And you're trying to buy votes. You're trying to convince people to vote your idea. If the talking goes on too much, what I did is I picked up my phone. I turned a 1 minute timer on and I didn't say anything because silence is a lot more powerful than yelling. I started the timer, I held it up above my head, and I slowly started to walk around the table. Didn't tell people what it was for, what I was going to do, or what happened, but I did tell them that I am a malevolent GM. I am against them. And so I walked around the table, and people suddenly noticed. They're like, oh, we got a timer! We got a timer! Come on, we got to rev it! And then, boom, it starts revving them up, and then they're going.
Did the time ever run out?
Yes, it did. I didn't drop the hammer on anybody.
I was about to ask if you had any idea what you were going to do at the time.
Here's the dark
secret. You had a whole minute to figure that out.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Here's the dark, dirty secret. The purpose was not to give me an excuse to drop the hammer. I never want to drop the hammer.
No, it's to get them to make their move.
Yeah. And then by the time it goes off, I can say, okay.
It's the same thing in those Star Trek ship-on-ship battles that I run at some conventions. You know, when I tell them they have 10 seconds to talk. Now, I do technically have a rule of what happens if they go over time. I have never once in my entire all these decades of running Star Trek, I've never once actually used that rule because it's never been necessary. It's just that the sword of Damocles in the form of that timer is sufficient to move people, which is all you want in the first place. Not only to keep the game moving, but also that sense of urgency helps to add to just the emotional gestalt of the game experience.
It adds suspense, just like when you're doing a dread-based game and you tell somebody, do two pulls in a count of five.
Yeah, we played the...
Suddenly your pulse rate goes up real high.
Yeah, before the con, I was playing the XCOM board game with Churcher and Sergeant Dan.
Are you sure it wasn't Traveler?
You know, I hear Churcher's running Traveler in every slot next to con.
I've heard
The con is.
Oh, yeah,
I've heard that.
And pre- and post-con games as well.
Absolutely. Right. He's doing nothing but Traveler.
Right.
So I saw this XCOM board game day. I am dying to hear what it was like because it looked really cool. I know it had like a tablet aspect to
it. I don't want to give a full review here and now. If people are interested, I can give one in a future episode, like maybe next show or something. It's a good game. But what I was going to say about this relevant to this conversation is once you get out of the couple of turns, you get to kind of figure the game out. It starts timing you and it times everything. For example, when I was playing the commander, because each of you plays a different role.
Is it somebody in charge of going, Commander?
I just went ahead and started doing that. You know, it's the guy from Honest Movie Trailers.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it really is. It's that same guy.
That's hilarious.
He's the guy who does the voice of XCOM. But anyway, I had to get a budget of like, let's say, you know, 10 money units or whatever. And I was timed, and if I didn't get all 10 of them pulled before that timer ran out, I didn't get that part of the budget.
Wow.
Now, you could say it's overkill.
Right.
You could say, you know, how likely am I not to be able to pull out enough of these things and some, but it still created that phantom of time, that specter, I guess is a better word than phantom, but specter of time that was always there. You always had the sense that everything you did had some amount of urgency to it.
So, you know, to roll up some advice here too, one of the things that I was doing for this large gaming group is that once you kind of get the handle on it, it's like, okay, I've got 16 people and I've got them engaged. I've got them organized and I've got them engaged. How do you run the game? And a lot of it is presenting them with a problem or something, a situation, and then letting them chew on it. Much of the game is them just talking amongst themselves, both in character and out of character, making plans, saying I'm doing this, and making yourself available. Because you don't want to just be, well, I'm talking, and they're all just listening and sitting there and staring at me.
We've got a podcast for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that people can run up to me and do the bribes, or if I walk around and I'm listening to stuff, I'm really trying to keep engaged because I've got my chips and I want to add to the economy. So people are saying cool things or funny things or whatever, I'm throwing them chips to kind of throw the balance of the economy off every now and again. You want to be available. You want to get them talking and engaged and such. But you have to balance that. There's a time for talking. Then there's a time for action. Then there's a time for voting. There's a time to ramp up the tension. There's a time to kind of back it off a little bit. And you got to really, your job is to read the crowd and to keep levering those knobs.
Yeah, I think also looking at this whole thing, I guess it's the politically correct thing that anyone can do anything they set their mind to. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go ahead and say the opposite. I do think it takes a certain type of GM to do this because Chad, I mean, all the things we've talked about and all the things that I observed were made possible by the fact that you're...
I have a loud voice that really projects.
That's a big part of it. I was going to... Not where I was going to start, but that's certainly one of the things I was going to say. You're extroverted. Mm-hmm. You're loud. You have a commanding central presence. You know, you can make yourself noticed very easily. You're good at thinking on your feet. You don't really muddle with mm-hmm. the decisions. You tend to just kind of grab something and roll with it and see where it goes. And I certainly think there are other people in the world that could do this.
I think Adam Gottfried could really do this.
And I think
I was about to say, if you're not Chad or Bob Ahrens, don't try it.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, but what I would say is I think there are some GMs that could not do this just because they're not wired for this kind of a situation.
I don't know if I could or not, but I wouldn't try because I wouldn't want to. It wouldn't put me in a place where I would enjoy running the game.
I was really looking forward to the game.
Well, and that's the thing. We have completely different mindsets of it.
Yeah. I was so scared that the food wouldn't turn out, or I wouldn't be able to get hot, or it'd turn out crappy and nobody like it. Because I did this sort of Mexican Cajun fusion jambalaya. It's sort of weird. And I wasn't sure people were going to like it. And then the game had 16 people and it was this system that I'd never done before. I was like, and I even told the players that, like, so many things can go wrong at any point of this. And I told them, it's like, don't think of this as an experiment, or don't think of it as a solid game. Think of this as more of a participatory art project. We're going to make art here, people, so it's going to be messy. But no, every little aspect worked out, and it's not because I'm awesome and my game's awesome. I am. But it's players. I ask the players to, like, go crazy, get engaged, start yelling, start screaming, get engaged. And it was also part of my job to be the cheerleader. And I think, really, that's the main thing. Because you can get organized and you can use a rules template and you can come up with a plot and story, and the players will kind of carry it where it needs to go if you can kind of get them pumped. But that's the thing. You got to get them pumped. You got to be a cheerleader. And we would do all kind of silly stuff. Like, we did a mid-game thing where I said, okay, well, I'm going to ask questions here. Who's having a good time at the con? I am! All right, give that match. And then I would throw the chip up in the air, and then everybody would be diving over it and fighting for it because the economy was so slim. So one chip was like a big deal.
And corruption is codified.
Exactly. The chip has definite meaning. I mean, think about it this way. You roll dice to play a role-playing game. You roll dice to hit. You can hit, and the range is 1 to 20, but you don't own any of those numbers on that die. You can't do anything to make those numbers happen low or high.
Yeah, I can't train my dice. And
we know how bullshit that is. But this chip, you own this. You earned it. It's yours. And you get to spend it how you want to either try to influence something to happen your way or not your way, or to completely bribe the GM to definitely make something happen. Within reason. I did tell a couple people no. When somebody tried to bribe me in a way that would directly impact another character, and I don't mean just like hit him in the face with a cream pie, but I mean like knock them out of the game or do something crazy like that, I'm like, no, that is going to take away control from them. So we can't do that.
Right.
People were pretty cool with it. Now, something that Wayne brought up that I kind of glossed over that was really awesome. Part of this is how to end the game, all right? So you have two teams, and you've just spent the entire 4 hours trying to get the teams to kill each other. That's the wrong way to do it. I set it up to where the two teams were trying to kill each other, but there is a common problem. To my mind, this is the best way to handle even a small game with a traitor aspect. You have tension on the team. You have a traitor, or you have two teams trying to kill each other, but you have a greater problem that is only solvable if they work together or defeat the traitor. And even to defeat the traitor, they have to work together. So the teams will either choose, screw it, we're going to kill each other, which is going to be a hilariously great game, or there's going to be a journey. And even in a raucous game you can't control, that's all kind of crazy, tons and tons of people, you create this massive problem and they start coming together. And this is how we ended it, where there was the massive problem, which, by the way, the massive problem I did not have going into the game, nor did I make up. One of my players bribed me. In my mind, I'm like, oh, End boss. I'm like, yes, I will take your chip, sir. It was basically the big bad is there. We have to defeat the big bad. I arrange it to where nearly everybody, I mean, you can't make every, there's 16 people. They're all over the ship. Nearly everybody was in where the big bad was. Big bad was going to kill everybody or they're going to kill each other. What do you do? I took the two bowls. I put them in my hands. It's the last 2 minutes of the slot. And I say, in this hand is life. Everybody works together and we beat the big bad and we all win. In this hand is death, where we don't defeat the big bad and we don't come together. In fact, we're working to sabotage each other. Which do you choose? Everyone vote. And people started walking around talking. They said, oh my God, tension's building up. Ting, 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 ting. I'm not even looking at the bowls in my hands. And I'm just ting, 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 ting. Both bowls. And everyone says, okay, we're done. And I look at them and I cannot tell which one has more chip. One looks like it's a little bit bigger than the other one. The captain of one of the, the captain of Team Results. We had Team Action and Team Results. One of the co-captains of Team Results says something like, I'm so spun up, I honestly don't know what he said. He said some cool, dry wit, something awesome, right? He has awesome one-liner.
I'll check the video.
Yeah, you check the video. He had been skimming votes. Every time he pulled a chunk of chips out of the bowl to redistribute to his players, his team, which he did religiously, he gave chips back to everybody. He was a great, fair captain, but he always kept one or two for himself, and he put them in his pocket. Every single vote. And then the last vote, he reached into his pocket, had a big old handful of chips, and dumped them all into one bowl.
So how did it end? Did they live or die?
They counted them up.
Yeah.
And it counted as a tie, which is like, oh my God! And I'm like, oh, I did not. Oh, crap. I just said that in my mind. And then the guy on Team Action who was counting them up said, oh, wait, I miscounted. We had this many and death lost. And they all worked together to
defeat. It was very anticlimactic.
It was very anticlimactic. And we're like,
because there's all this tension.
So you had it was a recount.
You had a close vote that ended on a recount because of Chad.
Yeah.
I
didn't count them.
You were involved in the process. I'm saying you just recreated the 2000 election.
That's right.
Well, I was watching the wheels go in your head, and at one point you pick up a chip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so like you were going to have to make the decision. And then the guy's like, oh, wait, I miscounted.
It was a tie. That's right. It was a tie. And then you know how I had my pile that was my pile of bribes. I had one bribe. Wasn't even planning this. Just somebody bribed me with something at the end. I forget what it was. I had one bribe and they were dead even. And what I was going to do is I was going to set them next to each other at the end of the table and I was going to try and toss it in.
All right.
But I didn't have to.
Okay, so once again, be sure to check the show notes for links to all kinds of stuff, charity-related stuff, Mihao's site, and of course, Chad's now laid out game, which we'll be putting up there as
new
well.
New improved site, new improved game.
Big thanks to everyone that came out to Fear the Con and to everyone that backed the Kickstarter, making it possible, and to those of you that donate to the charity. And stay tuned, because it sounds like we've got some kind of a fan-organized event that will, I'll get the details when we get them, that will probably be happening this coming year. And then we'll start talking about maybe what's going to happen beyond that.
And I want to give a shout-out to Team Action and Team Results, which are the two best and worst gas planet pirate teams ever.
So, thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya. Bully, bully, bully.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2015. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.